This is the Inside Slant Football Podcast.
And here we go, here we go.
Brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com. Broadcasting around the world.
Around the world.
We have the latest on KU recruiting, analysis, and what the coaches and players are saying behind the scenes. Here are your hosts, Randy Withers and John Kirby.
Hey, everybody, this is Randy Withers. Welcome into an upset edition, shall we call it, of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. We have got so much Kansas football to talk about after the historic upset last Saturday night of the Texas Longhorns in Austin, 57-56 in overtime. We have so, Kirby and I just cannot wait to get started with this podcast. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about the impact of the win, talk about the effects that it could have on recruiting for Lance Leipold and his staff. And we're also going to start to look ahead to the matchup this Saturday at TCU. And to do that, we're going to bring on one of our really good friends, David Lawrence, to join us. But before we do that, I'm going to bring in my partner and the publisher of Jayhawk Slant, the man on the Kansas football beat, Mr. John Kirby. Kirby, have you recovered from Saturday night yet?
Man, I have, Randy, but it's just been like nonstop, you know, just following everything and just the national recognition that these guys have had from the win. And it's been real fun to watch. I mean, you know, these guys deserve this. I mean, the program, absolutely, the program's been through so much. I mean, in the last 11 years and Leipold's come in and you know, they're trying to change the program around, and something like this can really go a long ways. But just to see the Jared Casey's and Trevor Cardell come up big, and Kyron Johnson, it just, I mean, was unblockable at times in the first half. And just to see some of the kids, Jalen Daniels, obviously. I mean, but just to see what some of these, you know, these guys just get rewarded for what they're doing and try to turn this thing around. And, you know, Randy, somebody told me the other day, they said, you know, even if they lose their last two, hey, this is one you can't take away from them. And I know Leipold nor his players would ever go into it thinking that, but from a fan's perspective, I think there's a lot to that. Is, you know what? You can't take this away, and they will go into the offseason and they're going to be able to tell people, hey, we won two more games than we won last year, right? The previous year. And there's going to be some other statistics that they can show where there's improvement. So, you know, it's just been fun watching these guys in the NIL with Casey, and then just, you know, some of the guys were on national radio and some national TV and got some awards. So it's been fun, man, just to see those guys go through that.
Absolutely. You know, seeing Jalen Daniels, you know, he won the Gorilla Glue Player of the Week award and was on the Rich Eisen show. And Devin Neal, you know, was the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Week. And obviously, I mean, everybody knows about Jared Casey and Applebee's already. So that's the easy one. But I mean, it's been a whirlwind. It really has. I mean, I know some people have asked about it on the boards. I want to throw it out to you. You've been around, you've covered college football for a very long time. Do you think this can become a distraction? I mean, I don't see Lance Leipold being the kind of coach that lets this become a problem at all. But I wanted to get your thoughts on that just before we really jump into anything else.
You know, I don't think so. Number one, Randy, you know, we talked about this on the board. It was brought up. You know, somebody said, you know, I hope all these radio interviews and all this stuff, you know, isn't taken away. Okay, but, you know, here's the thing, and this is a change and something we haven't really talked about a lot. You know, Kansas practices in the morning now, okay? Leipold did that when he was at Buffalo. So, and I'm just kind of painting a picture here of, you know, what a day in KU football is like and what people are used to what it was like, okay? Now they get in and they get their business taken care of in the morning, okay? Kids go to class, they get the practice out of the way, coaches go grade practice film, start doing, you know, opponents breakdowns and things like that, and then they can take that through the part of the afternoon, you know, they'll still have some player meetings, and then they can call some recruits later, and then their evening can be adjusted to how they need to work, Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's say Leipold says, guys, we didn't get what we needed accomplished done today. I know I told everybody you could go home at 7. Okay. We're going to stay to 8 and get this done. Okay. But when you practice in the afternoons, like a lot of teams do, and Kansas has always done in the past, you go out to practice at 3:30, 4 o'clock. There's days you may not get off the practice field till 6. Coaches go in, they watch the practice film. Okay. You call some recruits. You might even do a short meeting with some players at times. And next thing you know, it's 9, 10 o'clock. Well, you have nowhere to go. Okay. So the Kansas players, by, you know, we get there to interview them on Wednesdays. I usually pull in about 11:15. They're done. They're already gone to the indoor. So they have time. You know, I know people are like, well, what are these guys skipping practice? You know, they skipping practice to do NLI stuff. So it's funny. No, they've gotten everything taken care of. So, you know, it's just, it's one of those things. It's just been, there's not going to be a distraction. I don't think so. I don't think Leipold will allow it. And I don't know that these players yet have learned what it means to be a distraction. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're just playing football. They're just trying to turn a program around. So, I don't know. It will be interesting to see what they can do down in Fort Worth.
You know, and I think that heading down to TCU, I think the timing of this is really amazing. And I know, you know, we're going to talk about recruiting in a little bit. Just the way that it sets up perfectly for them to ride what is, you know, as Coach Leipold called it on the radio today, a real shot in the arm from a recruiting standpoint, from a momentum standpoint. They're going to be in position to really make hay with that a little bit in the Dallas area, Dallas-Fort Worth area, as they head to TCU this weekend. Before we get into that, though, I want to go ahead and we're going to turn it over to you now, John, and you're going to be joined by David Lawrence, the analyst for the Kansas Jayhawks Radio Network, who's going to talk with you about what was like to be in the booth calling such a historic game for this program and get his thoughts on where KU football is today.
We are going to bring in David Lawrence, the color analyst on the Jayhawk Network and former football player. David, how you doing?
John, I'm well, thank you. And, you know, like all of your subscribers, probably a little better than what we've been, right?
Yeah. You know, hey, David, I remember this asking Mark Mangino. I asked him this one time. I said, hey, coach, what's it like to win a big game like that? And, you know, in that Mark Mangino voice, he said, well, Curbs, you know, it's just another Monday. He goes, but the coffee just tastes a little bit better. You know, a total Mangino. But yeah, no, I think all the KU's fans, you know, the coffee tastes a little bit better, hopefully, on Sunday and Monday. So it's always a good. Hey, all right, so I want to ask you this. You know, I was watching the video of you and Brian Haney call the final 2-point conversion, Jayhawks win. Just give the fans an idea what it's like. Number one, to call a game like that where, you know, the good guys come out on top, and just the prep and what it's like going through a game day.
Well, John, thanks. And it's a little embarrassing, I guess, because old-time radio people I'm never truly aware that I have a video on me. Not sure how I feel about that, but that's where we're at, right? I'll tell you this. One thing someone couldn't say about me is I don't prepare. I prepare, particularly now that I'm retired from teaching, I have plenty of time, and I prepare for every game, regardless of the outcome. But certainly, competitive games are a lot more fun to call. I just lose myself in the moment. You know, I'm just reacting. I'm not really cognizant of the video of I'm just calling a game with Brian Haney and Brandon McAnderson. And, you know, just using everything that I've seen over the week to what I'm seeing on the field, to what I'm feeling. And certainly, yes, my feelings come out maybe a little bit more so. But, you know, it's interesting. What was it about 3 years ago? You alerted me to the fact that there was one of your people that called me a homerific boob, and so that's kind of been a playful nickname that I've had because I guess the only difference in that game and whenever that was, to the Texas game is we win, right? We win. And all the people that are on your board that are so optimistic and have been so loyal, my heart goes out to you. And, you know, as I've said, after some games, this one's for you because we deserve it, right? I mean, we have hung in there. We haven't been jumping off the bandwagon. We've been there, and we're frustrated at times, absolutely. But I think most of us know that that we do have the right guy in place, and it's great to see the win. I'm excited. I did get lost in the moment of just pure elation at the end of the game, as well as everybody out there, you know, that has hung in there. You can't hold that in, right? I mean, it's just, that's just part of us. And, you know, some people enjoy that homer, you know, effect, and obviously at least one person doesn't. But that's just who I am, you know, and I'm going to continue to get ready for every game each and every week. And my emotions probably will leak out.
Well, that's okay. Hey, you're a former player, and you wore the crimson and blue, so I think most people would always understand that. You know, I did want to ask you, you do study, and you prepare. I've talked to you over the years for so many times, and I know the work you put into it, but Lance has been saying all along that he's seeing small improvements, small steps. Okay, now maybe the common fan can't sit there and watch it, and, you know, they see an end result. Does a game like this now show people what he was talking about?
Well, it certainly does. And, you know, we're still going to be outmanned the last two games. But, his cry of 1% better every day, I mean, I think that is evidenced. There's no question about that. And, you know, we just witnessed his press conference. And, of course, all the questions were about the quarterback, and rightly, that's important. But I was just dying to ask him, talk about that offensive line and your tight ends and receivers and the way they are blocking, and just throw a tape on from the South Dakota game, because I don't know that you would recognize this, you know, that outfit outside the numbers are the same. It was just so fun to see. I mean, we did see it in Oklahoma, and yeah, granted, we did fall off against a great Oklahoma State team and a really good K-State team, but you know, I think a lot of that has to do with quarterback play and giving us a chance. And we saw great quarterback play against Oklahoma, and we saw great quarterback play against Texas. And you know, that's our defense. That's a big part of our defense, having that quarterback operate, be efficient on third downs. But I'm seeing offensive linemen getting to the second level. You see a hat on a hat. You don't see unblocked people coming through. How about our fullbacks and tight ends blocking down the field and you know, accounting for a person out there? I mean, we knew about Jared Casey not before the game began, but I saw him make a couple of blocks, and I turned to the guy that was spotting to us, and I said, "Wow. You know, can you find out who 47 is? Because he's a big part of this game." And he was able to do that. So only rightly he gets that call at the end. But Cardell and Fairchild, I thought, were really, really solid in blocking. And Cardell is a future star. I mean, this guy is a 6'4" athletic dude that can catch the ball. And you know, I think he's just kind of been hidden, you know, behind some stuff that hasn't given him the opportunity, but it's going to present itself as it did on Saturday, and he's going to be a big part of games. But, you know, Lassiter and Wilson and Arnold, and I mean, those guys were down the field blocking their tails off. Tanaka Scott, right at the beginning of the game, had a really solid
block.
Yes, he did. Michael Ford improved greatly. Cable do. Bostic has been much improved for quite a few games, but it's just it's great to see. And Devin Neal, I mean, what jumps out at me when you're watching the tape? I mean, he's got the skill set, but his pad level, he is able to run at a high rate and speed but his pad level is so low. And I think that's what's really jumping out to me, is what makes him special is his pad level and being able to run, you know, near full speed, to have pads that low. And then Jalen Daniels, I'm imagine you would agree with me, but I mean, he's a story. I mean, that, and not a shocker. We felt that way last year. I had a lot of conversations with coaches last year that thought this guy was the real deal, but and he was thrown to the wolves at 17. I think most of us understand how, A, you could probably get gun shy, and, you know, nothing against the guys up front last year, but we all know it was probably as bad as it got on the offensive line. And now we have a different group. We have a mature, more mature Jalen Daniels. And we saw the RPO influence that he was able to do in high school. He did it last year with Dearman, and he executed that so well. And you remember, I'm sure, the first pass that he threw, it sailed on him. And you and I probably thought, well, that's kind of what we saw last year sometimes, because he's got that strong arm and it's not under control. Well, that's it. That's all we saw of that, of Jalen Daniels of last year. As I don't remember a bad play he had after that. Maybe one time he should have thrown and he took it up and he ran. But, you know, he was significant. And you know, you could talk all along about how Texas has some more, you know, the measurables of guys, 4 and 5 star and whatever. And if you were to pick it, you know, from the two teams, you know, most of their guys would get picked earlier. You'd pick a quarterback first, and it's not even close. Jalen Daniels was so much more effective. It wasn't even close. And, I mean, that's a big difference in the game. The other thing that stood out to me is we looked like the well-coached team, and not going to beat up on Texas and what they have going on. But, you know, one team had 4 turnovers, one team had 0, one team had 3 personal fouls, one team had 0. I mean, those are just signs that you're well-coached. And, yeah, improvement significant. But they're improving every day. So some games it's just going to show up on tape more. But I think a lot of that has to do with having the quarterback that really helps your defense out on the other side. And we have got that 2 games, and most recently with Jalen Daniels. And while Lance does not tip his hat on the starter, he does say that Jalen's going to play. So we'll just kind of leave that out there and what people think. But this guy is a player, and he brings a charisma. I kind of compared him to like a Remy Martin, who just lights up the locker room when they come in. And, you know, Remy's our new basketball player. But he has that kind of effect on the huddle. And he's a leader. I mean, now he's a whole, 19 years old. So, you know, we're seeing a little bit more of the man that he's going to be. But I'm ecstatic about him. And I'm not taking sides on him or Bean. I'm just saying that Jalen's play was not just good. I mean, it was amazing. The way he stood out with very little time running snaps with the ones. What has it been, a week and a half? And he was able to put that on tape in a very difficult place to play. I mean, that was significant.
All right, so we've talked a lot about the win. I mean, there has been so much national pub and everything coming from this. I'm curious. I'm going to end it with this. Just talk about what can they gain from this win over Texas, and then what do you want to see these last couple games?
You know, what's always bothered me in the past, and again, this is where my passion comes out, is I hate it when, you know, the general thing is to translate over to basketball because we're not going to a bowl. And I want it to be completely different in that, A, we compete for a win. I mean, a win would be so big for this program and what we're trying to do moving forward. And this game is huge for us. And then, of course, we go to the West Virginia game on Senior Day. And to finish with a positive note on Senior Day, I mean, we are going to be outmanned. the next two games. But as I mentioned before, I think the margin, the difference is getting smaller and smaller. And we are so well coached. And obviously that gives us a chance. And, you know, that win moves forward. I'll leave you with a story on how a win over Texas can impact a program. Most of your people know that I was very close to Don Fambro all the way until he died and, you know, started back when I met him in 1978. But everyone remembers a story that he tells that he was a Texas native, went to University of Texas, was a starter there. He was actually the Texas High School Player of the Year. And he grew up on a his dad was a foreman for a big ranch, but they were poor. I mean, he was just a ranch hand. But one thing he was treated to is he could go to the owner's house on Saturday because he loved football and we'd listen to the Longhorn games. And naturally, when he got the opportunity to go there, when he was so good in high school, he took that. Well, World War II happened, and that's where he met Ray Evans over there, and they played football together. And he always said that Ray Evans, you know, he was his commanding officer, so he brought me back to Lawrence, Kansas. And I always thought, man, you know, because they were both married, that he would uproot his wife and go to a state he had never been in before just because of Ray Evans. And Ray Evans was awesome, okay? And I always thought there was something else. And then it was not long before he died that I figured out what it was, is when he was in high school, the Longhorns played in Lawrence, and we beat them. And so a few years later, when he's off in the war with Ray Evans, and he offered him and was talking him into coming back to Lawrence, he remembered back that Kansas must be big time. Huh. They took down my Longhorns. And thus, I think it had a big reason why Fambro went with Ray Evans back to Lawrence and basically never returned. And you can argue he is the most impactful Jayhawk ever, because if he was not only a great player, but he spent 20 years as an assistant, 8 years as a coach, coached more NFL players than probably any two other people with the organization. But that's just a long story. I apologize on how that win in Austin can impact the future of Kansas football.
David, there is no need to apologize after a story like that, man. Hey, that's why we bring you on. We love those stories. That's a good one. I'll tell you what, I've heard bits and pieces of that, but I've never heard it that detailed. And that is a great way to end this one. And I, along with the fans, really appreciate you coming on and just talking about your experience in the booth and what you're seeing, because everybody knows you work hard at it and you're great at your job. So, hey, maybe you can go down there and call another one like that this weekend.
You know, it's going to happen, you know, at some point in time. I mean, and of course, we're going to, you know, in the future, you know, I'm not going to be quite as overcome with joy, because it'll be more of an expectation, right? That's what happens. But the first one, and I think you know this, the first step in a rebuilding process is the first one, right? It's getting in the door of those first recruits that you can't really show them any winning games on tape, right? And now you've got that. So that is a first step. And if we can get another win or two wins, that's just another step in the process that Coach Leipold is on. He's going to get it done, but this is obviously, having this experience early is just going to speed up the process.
David, great stuff, great information. As always, we appreciate you joining us on the Inside Slant podcast.
I appreciate you and all the loyal Jayhawk football fans out there, man. It's like a club. We should probably get a name for us.
David, hey, thank you very much. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
John, I know you've been talking to a number of recruits since Saturday night. What kind of impact can this win at Texas over one of the highest profile programs in the country, what kind of impact can it have long term for this program, or going forward, I guess, a better way to put it, from a recruiting standpoint?
Well, you know, Randy, we just talked about that this was a national recognition type win, okay? And listen, when I say this, I'm not knocking Kansas State or Iowa State or anything like that. But if Kansas would have gone on the road and beat Iowa State or Kansas State, none of this would be going on, okay?
True.
They beat Texas. Is Texas as good as Iowa State or K-State? Probably not right now. They're not, okay?
Nope.
But they're still Texas. So a win like this goes a long way because it gets you on all the national shows. It's, you know, all the players. I talked to several recruits down in Texas, and they all knew about the game. Some of them didn't watch it, but they were all watching highlights. Some of them were following it. You know, a lot of recruits here locally, a lot of people knew about the result when the game ended. So, you know, it's Texas. You know, that's easy put. I know Jeff,
exactly.
My buddy Jeff Ketchum would kind of be sticking his chest out thinking, hey, you know, we're Texas. But no, so, you know.
Jeff Ketchum, who told us last week this could happen.
No, he did. He did.
He absolutely, he tried, and you and I still picked Kansas to win this game.
No, he did. He flat out said, his quote was, if Kansas just brings their B-minus game,
they've got a chance.
And comes to fight, they're going to be in the game in the fourth quarter. That's what he said. And, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, they can't stop Bijan Robinson. And, you know, I'm thinking these things just from an analytical standpoint. Hey, one thing I do want to go back on when you were talking about the recruits and the and what it could mean. You know, Leipold's been saying throughout the year that he sees small strides. He's mentioned it several times, okay? And I know from a fan perspective, a recruit perspective, you sit here and you try to say, what is he seeing, right? Like, what is he looking at? Now, obviously, he watches and knows a lot more about the program than anybody on the outside. But now, a game like this now validates and proves to show what he was talking about. So when he kept saying, hey, we're seeing small strides, we're seeing us get better, and then maybe they go to Oklahoma State and get drubbed, and you go, well, I don't see the strides. Well, he's saying, I still see the strides. They're breaking down the film. So this win here shows you these are the strides that he was talking about. And now there's tangible proof to show that he was on the money when he was talking about that.
Absolutely. Now, you know, you talk about recruiting, though. You've had the chance to reach out, and you've spoken with several kids, both local kids here in Kansas, Kansas City area, as well as kids, you know, in Texas and other parts of the country. What are they telling you? I mean, what has the reaction been? Is this a big deal to the kids that are going through the process right now that Kansas is recruiting?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, this is something that shows a recruit. Listen, recruits still want to go play for somebody who wins, okay? And, you know, when you look back, hey, let's take Mangino for an example, okay? People were talking about some of the recruits he was able to get, the Daryl Stuckeys and the Jake Sharps and some of these guys. But remember, Kansas was showing some strides when those kids committed to Kansas, okay? It wasn't like they were 0-11, all right? They, in year two, he won. He was able to kind of go get some guys and sell off of that. So now Leipold and his staff can go and they can show, hey, listen, we won two games. The previous year, they won none. We are going up, okay? We are on an upward trend. Next year, we're going to get more. And hey, maybe it's more than two. I'm just saying that it sits at two right now, which is two more than they had the previous year. So he can sell progress.
Let's talk about that upward trajectory and the chance for two in a row. Let's talk about this TCU game, John. The line is 21. What do you think about the matchup with the Frogs?
Well, Randy, I'll tell you, I'm a little concerned about this game, okay? And I have gone back and watched TCU. I've watched what some of the games they've played. I've looked at their personnel. They've still got football players, okay? Listen, they went down to Lubbock, and I mean just lined up and pistol whipped the Red Raiders, all right? They beat Baylor, okay? And Jerry Kill's first game, taken over from Patterson, they beat Baylor. So Baylor's damn good, all right? So that's no joke. So they've shown they can line up and beat teams. The thing that worries me, Randy, a little bit offensively is they go fast. They hurry it up. and they've got a nice scheme. They're spread out. They get the ball to the perimeter. Their receivers make good blocks. You know, the one game that I watched them play that I just thought they were kind of disinterested was Kansas State. I just thought they went through the motions against Kansas State. It's the one game offensively that you just went, what are they doing? You know, what are they trying to do? And they had some quarterback problems because Duggan, that's the game he was replaced by Morris. So, you know, that game you kind of almost throw out the window because there was really no flow. But the Kansas defenders, the safeties and the corners are going to have to be ready because they're going to be put in bad situations all day, okay? And TCU can run the football. I know the – you know, there's still talk about the Evans kid and what his situation is with injuries. He's really good. So, you know, Chandler Morris is expected to play. He got banged up, okay? He played well against Baylor. But last week against Oklahoma State, he got hurt a little bit. And they brought in the backup, the freshman kid. So, but everything that I'm hearing is they expect Morris to play. When you look at them on defense, okay? And I know you can't just look at teams physically and I talk to so many coaches, and it's so funny. It's a trait that coaches have. They talk about, you always hear them say, oh, man, they're a good-looking team. You know, or man, they got a bunch of good-looking guys. You know, yep. it's a coach speak thing because you're looking across the field and you see defensive ends who are 6'6", 250 or 6'5", 260, and you go, man, I wish we had one of those guys, right? I mean, you know how coaches talk. You've been around coaches enough to know that's how they think. Well, when you look at TCU, I look at them, I go, man, they got some good-looking kids on defense. That doesn't mean they're always going to play well, right? Texas has good-looking players too. So, you know, their linebackers, I think, are pretty good. Up front, they've got some athletes. They're long. They're athletic. You know, they've missed a couple guys with injuries in the secondary. I just think, Randy, this is one of those things, and trust me, I am not being negative when I say this, but it's one of those deals where you just want the Jayhawks to show you and prove they can win two in a row in the conference, right? It's been a long time since we've seen that. So you're just waiting for them to do it, but they're going on the road. TCU still has a chance to play in a bowl game. I think Jerry Kill will have him up. You know, he said, I watched his press conference before we did the podcast, and he said some really nice things about Leipold.
He was very complimentary.
Well, and he's sincere, okay? Sometimes you guys get up there and they say stuff, and you don't know if it's coach speak or not, but from him, it's not, because he is a straight shooter. What you see is what you get with Jerry Kill, and I think he meant every word that he said, but... You know, Vegas has this thing at like 21 right now, which, God, I don't know. You know, I just don't know where that comes from. Hey, maybe they're just trying to dare people to take the Jayhawks, thinking that, you know, it's a rebound game for TCU and maybe a letdown game for KU. I just think in the end, TCU style of play, they have enough to win the game. I'm going to go TCU 28, Kansas 20. Now, give me yours.
Again, we are very, very close in how we see this one, except for the fact that I see this game being a little bit closer. You've got it 28-21. I'm going 28-24 TCU. I see this game being close in the fourth quarter. I see this being a situation, though, where TCU comes into this one, and I know we said this about, you know, said this Oklahoma State after the close late loss to Oklahoma, that they had their eyes wide open. And that's what I totally expect from a veteran TCU team, even though obviously TCU is going through a lot of change within that program with head coaching change and player movement and everything. They're still TCU, and they are going to come out and they're going to play tough. They're going to play very assignment sound. They're going to be very athletic. And I expect it's going to take a great effort from KU to be in this game late. And I expect to see that. I think that TCU will just have a little bit more in the tank after what was a hugely emotional win Saturday night for KU. I think it'll be close. I don't see KU getting it done, but I see them having a good showing in Fort Worth. I do think that's going to happen. All right, Kirby, let's wrap this thing up with, you know, some of the latest news that you've got in conversations that you've had with recruits, what's some of the latest news that we can share with people about the recruiting trail and what Lance Leipold and the staff are kind of doing to try to maximize the momentum that they picked up after the win against Texas?
You know, Randy, when you say momentum, you know, I think of sometimes that more with high school kids, right? Those are most of the players I've reached out to that were watching it. And I think a lot of that you're going to see in the 2023 class, okay? I think you're going to be able to see them sell some of that because I think the 2023 class is going to be your heavy high school class. I still think this class you're going to have a mixture of, you know, a small handful of junior college players, maybe 3 to 4 of them, okay? And then you're going to see some portal guys. Now, with the portal guys, excuse me, you got to keep an eye on this because I think D2 just ended their regular season maybe last weekend, and then you're going to have a lot of teams that are ending their seasons after this coming week, after this week's games, okay? So you're going to start seeing more players enter the portal, all right? And, you know, we've talked about this December 15th date, which I think it's a terrible deal.
Yeah, you've made it very clear you are not a fan of that.
Well, it's because – listen, it's going to be hard for a lot of players to stay past December 15th because they need to find a future home, okay? They want to go take visits and see schools and make a determination on where their future is going to be. So I just think they got that wrong, but I think you're going to see more possibilities for the Jayhawks enter the portal in these next 2 weeks because now as seasons start ending for teams, that's when guys are going to come out and start announcing they're going to the portal a lot more than you've seen here lately. I do. There are a few things I'm following. The couple things that are starting to develop. They're on two kids at Hutchinson Community College, Deshaun Singleton and Nadame Tucker. Tucker's a DN. Singleton's a safety. Both very talented players. I like them. I think they're the type of kids who could help the program if they were there in year one. I think they were talking about December 3rd. Singleton told me December 3rd, but I think Hutch, no matter how their season ends, they're going to be playing December 3rd. So I think the staff could try to bring them in for the West Virginia game to get them in and get their official visits taken care of before their December 3rd game. So those are two guys to watch. The other one, you know, some developments kind of came out today on this. He went to Twitter. I haven't reported on it. There's been no story. You've seen no comments, official comments from him, because I still think there's some work to do on the back end to secure the commitment and some things like that. But Mike Smith, he's a linebacker from Gulf Coast Community College. I really like him. You know, he doesn't have a lot of Power 5 offers. He's got some sub-Power 5 offers, some G5 guys. But he is the type of linebacker that I think Kansas needs. Kansas needs a guy who can play in space. That's one that they're going to have to look for because they don't have that. And this guy's kind of like that hybrid. I know this. I know Chris Simpson went down and watched him in the bye week, okay? And then Kansas just offered him last night. They just offered him on Tuesday night. So the offer's still fresh out there, but I think he's a guy that, you know, good chance here, good percentages. He could end up being a Jayhawk, and I do think he is the type of guy. He's a mid-year guy. I think he is somebody that could come in, and I don't know if he'd do the Hawk, but he would definitely be like an outside linebacker type that would play in space.
Interesting. I know there have been some people that have conveyed some concern, and I know we've talked about it ad nauseum, that there are going to be junior college players in this class and that it's nothing to worry about because of the condition of the roster and the way the class distribution is set up. Do you want to reiterate that again, or do you feel like we've beaten that horse enough?
Well, we've beaten it up enough. But hey, I'll talk about it because there could be people listening to this podcast that haven't listened to our last few.
But, and if you are new here, welcome. We're happy to have you.
Yes. So with the JUCO rules and the COVID, just like Division I, the JUCO players all get a COVID year back, okay? So I believe Singleton is a 4x3. I think Tucker's a 3x3. I think Smith is a 3x3. Now, I'm still waiting to hear more on that. But my point is, these are junior college players, so they get tagged as being junior college players. But when you're a 4x3, you're almost like a high school player because that means you have 4 years to play three, meaning you can redshirt, you know, and 4 years on a campus. So that's a lot closer to me, Randy. I look at that more like a high school kid than I do a junior college player. So with this COVID year, and not only that, a lot of these players have had a chance to get an extra year and spend it on campuses and get ahead academically. That's why there's a lot of junior college players who are going to be mid-year this year. So, hey, that's my take on it. I know some people would say, I know some people are scarred, okay? They remember the JUCO
guys.
They've
been hurt before, John.
Oh,
and it's hard to love again.
And you know what? Hey, Randy, I don't blame them, okay? But there's a big difference. There's a difference between taking 10, 11, 12 junior college players as opposed to three or four max, okay? So there's a big difference.
True.
And it's the type of player that you're taking. So I am 100% fine if they find a small amount of junior college players that they think can come in and give immediate impact at positions that they think need help.
That's the final word from John Kirby. I'm Randy Withers. You've been listening to the latest edition, the post-Texas apocalypse upset edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. You heard from David Lawrence about what it was like to be in the booth calling the historic upset of Texas in Austin. We talked recruiting. We previewed this weekend's matchup with TCU. And you heard John, again, make the point that Kansas fans don't need to worry about taking junior college players in this recruiting class. With that, we're going to bring this thing to an end. You've been listening to the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk with you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.